Hey, everybody. What's going on? I'm Rob Cesternino, and we have some great coverage for you here today because we've put together another panel discussion here today as we are talking with some of Survivor's winners of color. And of course, this was something that Sean Rector had this idea to bring together some of Survivor's non-white winners to talk about their story, their experience, and everything else that's going on in the Survivor world. So, of course, let me welcome back in Sean Rector. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Rob. Always appreciate the platform. And I don't want the fans to think, he doing another black show. It's like, that's all he wants.
Well, we've gotten such great response every time that we've done one of these, really? So that I can assure you that the listeners have really appreciated all the work that's gone into organizing these panels over these last couple of months.
No, well, I appreciate it only because I feel like, you know, when we say non-white, obviously we have our only two-time brown Latina winner. We have Natalie, and her background, I believe, is Tamil. Like, is it like some, like, I'm saying Tamil because I know her father is like, and obviously Jeremy, Wendell, African-American. So, I mean, the perspective, as I've always said, was that Survivor is overwhelmingly white. So if you're non-white and you win, there's a unique storyline that's never heard. It's just, you know, you win, the fans see you, but I think it's, our trajectory in our lives plays out in a game like Survivor. And I think the fact that we have these winners on here to have this unique perspective, I don't think we've ever really had a unique roundtable where non-white folks can talk about what that was like to win $1 million on a show like Survivor, where clearly you were outnumbered in terms of race. So that's really why I thought this would be interesting.
All right. Well, let's welcome in everybody who's here, of course, that we have back with us. Very excited, of course, the amazing winner of Survivor Marquesas. Please welcome back Vesepia Robinson. Vesepia, how are you?
I'm doing good, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, doing very good. We're always excited to see you and see all these million-dollar smiles here with us today.
Yeah, it looks like this is the OG version because the younger cats haven't arrived or are not here. But it's good to see Sandra again, Earl, and, you know, of course, my brother from another mother, Sean. It's always a pleasure. I mean, we talk frequent, so it's always good to be here with him as well.
Okay. Of course, with us is the winner of Survivor Fiji, Earl Cole. Earl, how are you?
Hello. Good to be here. Glad to support. Definitely have lots to talk about, for sure.
Okay. And then, of course, the two-time winner of Survivor Pearl Islands, and now on Netflix, Survivor Heroes versus Villains, the Queen, Sandra Diaz-Twine. Sandra, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy. That was my dog coughing. I'm sorry. I muted the mic at the last minute. I had to figure out where the button was.
Yeah, your dog is coughing.
Yeah, she has a collapsed trachea. She's old already.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that happens to them. Sepia's laughing at my poor dog.
Yeah, that's a great intro, Sandra. Yeah.
And I also want to say we extended the invitation to all of the other Survivor winners of color, and they could not all be with us here today, but we welcome more conversation and hope that at some point we can catch up with everybody.
Yeah, so let's jump right in the interest of time and just content. I know you guys, as I said, have the unique perspective of having a $1 million check in your hand while playing a brutal game that requires all three elements to outwit, outlast, outplay. And I thought, what a unique perspective we haven't really heard. Our brother Earl is the first black man to win. I was excited when you won. I was excited when we finally got to meet in person. You have a unique story, and I'm only starting with you because I know in the interest of time, you have to leave. tell us a little bit about who you are, Earl. What led to your trajectory to up to when you received that $1 million check, and what that experience was like?
Oh boy, that's a very complex question. Many layers to that. I'll say, you know, the difference with my season with a lot of the seasons, it was one of the only two seasons where they kind of had some equality and balance with the different races. Doesn't take away the hardships of the game and the challenges, and you're still playing a game, but it definitely just makes things a little different. But I would say, you know, speed past the, you know, the 39 days, getting that check on what it means to your family is a big deal, especially from, you know, an African-American family, you know, grew up in a church, you know, those type of things. Immediately, I'll to be real and honest, you know, you got payouts right away. There's payouts. Like, all right, you got to pay mama back. You got to pay mama back for what? For just being mama. So you got to give your mother some money. You got to give your two sisters some money. You know, then it's like, oh, you, well, you got church. Well, church been there for you too. So you got to give your church money. So,
oh, real.
And I was, you know, I was more than happy to give that money. You know, the interesting thing is, you know, when you come from, you know, I'm from the projects, poor background and all that, the perception of what $1 million is very different from what it actually is to certain people. I said, I did not win $100 million. It's just $1 million. Okay.
So with taxes taken out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, don't forget about the taxes.
Take the taxes out. So, but people think you're automatically rich and you're this. Like, no. I am not rich. You know, I have to spend accordingly. You know, I have to, a certain lifestyle I would like to have, but, you know, need another zero on the end of that check for me to start being, you know, free spending and going on shopping sprees and buying a private jet. You know, I heard all kind of craziness with that. But, you know, the thing is, the inspiration and the freedom that you get to do certain things and help your community and just being that representation, you know, for me, it was like, okay, I'm the first African-American male winner. That was a big deal. It was like a sigh of relief for me. There was so much pressure when I was on my season, like, we got to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I had heard about what happened the season before when they had split everything up with race. And, you know, it just didn't work out. But I said, like, we have to make this happen. We had a subliminal conversation, I'll say, the black people on my show, like, we got to stick together. You know that, right? We don't even have to talk about it. We got to stick together. Got to make this happen. And so there was a lot of pressure to do that. And you know, I tell people now, it's like, I felt like every night I was playing Queen's Gambit, if you ever seen that on Netflix. Like, I was, it was literally like playing chess all night, like looking at the ceiling, at the sky, like all these moves I was making, all this weight and this pressure. You know, and for me, I mean, I don't know how it is for everybody else, but, you know, when there hasn't been an African-American winner yet, you know, there have been African-American icons like Sean and other people, you know, I knew about Vesepia, but no one had crossed the tape, the one that, you know, cross the tape yet. And so I carried that with me. And when I wasn't just playing, because, you know, I'm going to be all over the place, I'm trying to relive the moment here. I remember Jeff, you know, later saying, like, you know, Earl's a great player, but, you know, the charisma just didn't come through, you know, which is why I was invited back all the time. I've been invited back, of course, and invited to Sebi back. I see that everywhere I go. But I said, you know, Jeff, we play a different kind of game. You know, I don't have the same liberties to talk a certain way. You know, you say, you know, you're an authentic self, but there's many layers to being authentic. You know, there's not just one guy. There's like several things that I've been through in life, and I got to pick which layer I'm going to use in certain moments of the game. So I was playing against people. I was playing against the producers. I was playing against Jeff. Like, I wouldn't even say certain things in my confessions because I don't know what they're going to use. I don't know what they're going to take. I don't know if I can trust them. I wouldn't even say things in tribal council. I don't know, Jeff. I don't know if I can trust Jeff. It's like, I don't know what they're going to use against me. So I didn't even say anything in tribal council. I kept it all up here. And I would, dispense things in certain moments with information. And I don't want to get long winded with all this, but I'm just trying to give you an insight to what I was thinking while I was out there. And I was able to play, you know, to quote my mother, Boo Boo the Fool for a while at the beginning. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And I found it interesting that I was able to get away with that. I said, why am I able to give it away with people thinking I don't know anything? I'll let that be another conversation, but I was able to use that knowing that I knew a lot. You know, they didn't know my background too much, but if you talk to other people in my season, like Dreams and Cassandra, they make the statement of how they felt invisible. And there's a whole book written about that, but they felt invisible on their tribe. They were on another tribe than I was on. And they say that people wouldn't even listen to what they had to say, like, at all. You know, and mind you, this is racially equal, but the same kind of things were still being perpetuated. Why is that? I don't even know. Like I said, again, we can get more depth with that. But back to the check. The check was great. It wasn't that much. I live in California. That does not buy me a certain kind of house or anything like that, as opposed to where I'm originally from, you know, Kansas City. If I was in Kansas and won the money, it definitely been a different lifestyle. But, you know, I still had to go to work like everybody else. I still had to, you know, do certain things. But I knew I had this platform now and I wanted to use it. And I wanted to make sure I was present. And all the survivor stuff, like, there's a black winner now. There's a black male winner. I got to be present. Y'all need to see me. Go to all the charity events. You're going to see me. Y'all going to know I'm here. Y'all going to see me all the time. And I was so relieved when Jeremy finally won. I said, "Whew, I'm retired." I'm going, showing up to all these charity events. I'm back, doing all back, brother. Back, and y'all ain't seen me since.
No, I'm agreeing with that. No, that, you know what? What's interesting about your story is every emotion you just expressed, because yes, we're black, but black men specifically have a unique psyche that black women don't and wouldn't understand, and vice versa. But as a black man, to your point, I felt the same way. Some of those same feelings of I had to diminish my intelligence to a certain extent to make sure everyone was comfortable. But, you know, except in those moments when, you know, when I want to express myself, I just don't give a damn. Then it's like, whatever the hell you're going to think about me, this is what it is. But that's a historical thing, Earl, that in this country, black people had to scratch when it don't itch, smile when it ain't funny just to survive. And that's part of that social chameleon, that double thing that we always have to play. So that's really interesting. Sandra, coming to you, because you broke the mold on so many levels. I think, you know, you being a woman, you being a Latina, a person of color, and I think even as we were laughing when we first came on, you talking about your dog, like, I said it in my interview with EW. I said I would have loved to have played against you and Rob for various reasons. But I think you remind me of a lot of the Puerto Rican, Dominican, Latinos that I grew up with in New York. And to me, I saw you like I saw the people in my neighborhood. And for you to win, it was really special for me and others, because I think and then for you to do it twice, I still don't think that you get enough credit for doing this thing twice. Yes, they've had you on several times. Yes, you and Rob had the big ass head statue that looked crazy on the island. All of that. But I think in the larger scope of things, you don't, and the fans, obviously you have fans, all of us love you, but I don't think in general you get enough credit for doing this thing under your own terms. So Sandra, tell us a little bit about you and your trajectory, what it was like when you won your check, what it did with your family and things like that.
When I applied for Survivor, I think if I'm not mistaken, Jesse Camacho was the only Hispanic on the show at the time. And that was in Africa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when anyone says about certain people really not being put on the show, I feel like we're way at the bottom of that totem pole. But when I did play the game, it was like the minute people from my family knew I was on Survivor, they would tell everyone. So in essence, when I won, I think everybody won. I mean, there were my grandparents, you know, where we live in Puerto Rico in the mountains, a lot of people at the time weren't even watching TV. And here they are going to get a TV, going to get Dish Network just so they could get the CBS channel just to watch me on Survivor so they could talk about it. So when I won, it was like everybody won. not that everybody was going to get money, but just that like, oh my God. And then it wasn't easy because, again, people dismiss you as not knowing anything. You're just getting lucky. You're just always on the right side of the coin. So they perpetuate like you don't put any thought into the things that you do. There's things you do that either they work out or they don't. For me, they just happened to work out. So I did have some luck, but not everything was just luck. And then when you get that $1 million check again, if only there was no taxes, you know what I'm saying? Like, really not a million. So you have to say, okay, yes. Yes, mommy. Yes, grandma. Yes, brother. Yeah. Yes, sister. Here you go. But this is a one-time hit. Like, this ain't going to be a monthly, yearly, right. You know, because I
until you go
to,
back.
I went right back to work. I mean, I was back at work before the finale even happened. So people don't realize there's a lapse in time. I'm not going to get the check tomorrow. That check is next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's even if you expect to get it. The two times I won, I didn't know I won. I didn't expect to win. I thought Lil won. I thought Poverty won. I was the last one that expected to win, but I did. And it just helped us out because we were a military family. I didn't tell anyone when I was playing on Survivor Pearl Islands that I had just gotten out of the military. I had done 5 years. I didn't re-enlist. And 9/11 had just happened. And so we always went paycheck to paycheck, but I always worked. Even when I got out of the Army, I always had a job lined up. So I've always been a worker. I've been working since I was 14 years old. So when I got that money, I was over the moon excited because I knew that I had worked so much and I still work. But it was just a blessing. And when I won Heroes versus Villains, I know my mom was looking out for me from heaven. I swear to God, she was out there with me. Hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. My husband was in Afghanistan. That was another thing. Always like, I wonder if my husband's okay today, you know? But it's helped me, you know, like I always tell people, when you go from paycheck to paycheck and then you go from interest check to interest check where you don't even have to look at where the money's coming from. And I don't spend a lot of money. When people meet me, they don't even know I was on Survivor or that I won $1 million because I don't come off like that. And I don't pretend to be something I am not. I don't drive a fancy car. I don't know. I feel like I'm still down to earth, you know, because I wanted my money to last me. My first $1 million, I wanted that money to last me an eternity. So I penny pinch. Rob knows I coupon.
Sandra could tell you where all the Black Friday deals are going to be. And she's got all the coupons, too.
I'm making my notes now because I don't want to buy them. Right. So I'm at the Dollar Tree buying my supplies. Like,
love it.
Okay. Smart.
But that's my life. And there hasn't been another Hispanic winner, Latina, Latino, nothing. Nope. And again, you don't see a lot of them on the show. So I'm glad I read the other day where they're going to allow more know, diversity. So hey, fingers crossed that it happens because more stuff.
Yeah, that, I would love to get into that a little bit because I know since the last time that we had a conversation like this on the podcast, that CBS had come out and announced that from here on out, that 50% of the cast on the reality shows Survivor and Big Brother, Love Island, they said we're going to be composed of 50% at least Black, Indigenous people of color. Sean and V, I know that you two were part of those conversations that were had along with people from the Soul Survivor organization. Can you guys talk a little bit about some of the things that you were pushing for?
I do, but before we do it, I want to give V equal time to give her trajectory about her $1 million check, and then we can segue that into what Sandra, because V, like Sandra, was in the military. And I think the fact that Sandra didn't tell anyone and the fact that I knew Vesepia was, it made me view her differently because I'm like, and then Vesepia was a military police. So she wasn't just like, there was layers to this woman that was not shown or seen. So V, tell us what that $1 million check and what that experience was like for you. And then we can jump into some of those meetings that we have with CBS about.
So Sean knows my history. You know, I was raised by a single mother, Miss Bernice, she's a piece of work. I have to tell you, she was the one that actually doubted me going on Survivor and doubted me even winning. All the way up until Central Park, she was still doubting that I would not win. And even when I came home, black as night, skinny as all get up, all she kept saying was, well, we'll just see. We'll just see. But she was the first one hugging up on Donald Trump the minute I won. I mean, she, in Central Park, she was all over his neck. Oh, my baby! Yes. Oh, my baby! And I was but
the real Donald Trump
was sitting next to my mom at our finale. Yes, truly. But when I came home, do you guys remember the episode of Martin when Martin won that he had that lotto ticket and he won a, it was like $900,000 and he was all like, woo!
Right.
And everybody and daddy came out of the woodwork. Even people like Tina and Pam, they all went out and bought stuff. Even Martin went out and bought stuff before he even got the money. And then later found out that, yeah, he won, but also about 690 other people won. So he only got like $65. Right. He had to split it. So I say this to say, after I had won, I had two family members actually went out and got loans expecting me to pay off their loans, you know, and I was the type of person that I'm going to hook the family up. I mean, that's just first and foremost, you know, God first. I split money to three churches because there were three churches that were very important in my upbringing, in my life. And then next was family. So not only did I give family members money, but then they came back like, oh, you know, actually, you know, that loan was for $12,000 and you only gave me five. And I'm like, that's your problem. Having to deal with that. But, you know, having to step back and really look at what this was going to do for my family. I really had to ask my mom, what is it that she needed? Because I knew everybody was going to get something. Yeah. But they weren't going to get what they thought they were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And having to sit down with each family member and really ask them what did they need as opposed to what they wanted was tough because way too many of them had these like lofty needs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had very, very little wants. So it was a tough thing to have to go through. But even before that, when I decided to apply for Survivor, you know, my faith is the most important thing to me. And I took a piece of paper and I wrote down, I will get on Survivor.
Yeah.
And, you know, the word of the Lord says faith without works is dead. And what that means is you can't have faith and just sit back and expect the doors to open. You got to have movement so that the Lord will see, okay, yeah, you work in it. So now I can open doors because I can see that you're doing something. And so I wrote on a piece of paper, I will be on Survivor. And at that point, I just started doing little things, just kind of getting the upper body strength ready, you know, just working out, got the call, long and short of it. Once I got on the show, I wrote it in my book of poetry, which was my luxury item. Y'all remember luxury items from back in the day? We got to bring luxury items.
Oh, boy.
My book of poetry, I scratched out, I will be on Survivor and said, I will win Survivor. And I kept that with me out there on that island. And there were times where, you know, because I was like, yeah, I'm going to be the first Christian to win this game, you know, and I'm going to have everybody pray. And we had so many people. It seemed like our season was a season of some form of religious undertone, you know, because we had Peter, that his religious beliefs was that all the holes in your body can be receptors to whoever it is that you talk to. You know, we had our atheists, we had our gay Christian, we had people that just did not believe, we had some that did believe, you know, but could care less. And every time we were on a tribe that did not win a challenge. The whole time we did not win a challenge. And people would come by and say, where's your God now?
Really?
Yeah, where's your God now? And I'd be like, you guys, let's just pray. And they'd be like, no, I don't want to pray because we're losing.
Who would say that? That was the other players or the producers?
No, the other players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to kind of name drop or say who said what, but there were people that said that. And on day three, I went out in the woods just to have my prayer moment. And I started talking to the Lord and I just said, why do you have me out here? You know, I'm around these people that don't care, that don't know you, that don't want to know you. And maybe this is not the place for me. And so the Lord said, I didn't bring you out here to fail. And he said, you're playing wrong. You're trying to play their game. He said, I want you to play your game, but I also want you to play based on the rules. The rules say to outwit, outplay, and outlast. And you're not doing that yet. You're trying to be this Christian, this high and mighty Christian. No, play their game, lie, backstab, do all that stuff. And then they're going to turn around and they're going to be shocked because they're expecting you to be this Christian, good Christian girl. But do what you need to do. And at that point, that's when I started to play. And Earl, I love when you said that you played hard, but they didn't know it. I held so much back from the producers. It wasn't even funny. There were times that the producers would pull me aside and say, you're not giving us enough. And I was in my mind, I was like, exactly, because I don't want you to turn my words around and use it in somebody else's confessional. And so it may have been a detriment to my game, you know, for editing purposes, but I knew what I was doing. And the people that were out there in the game knew what I was doing. But the producers did not see that. And so it made me look like not a good winner in their eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and hindsight is 20/20. And maybe if I went out another time, I would not do that. But I knew that was my strategy and that was the way I wanted to play the game.
So let me jump in real quick. Because your story, I know because I was there and I witnessed it. And I know that, you know, like you said, luxury item, I brought a Bible. And that already made me look like Jesus coming out here with his word and his thing. But when we connected, I knew we were going to be connected because when we would go pray, and connect, like the camera caught us every so often, kind of bonding and things.
Right.
But there were doubters. And I when I saw it, I thought, wow, they really played up the race thing and not as much the faith-based thing. And I felt like a lot of people really didn't give us and you specifically enough credit with our faith. And so that was very interesting to watch firsthand. But the thing, I want to segue a bit because I know Earl has to leave. To Sandra's point, you're right. So we as black people, like, man, it's only two of us. If you're a Latino person, you're like, it's one, like every Haley's Comet. Like, it's just and then maybe 20 years later, we'll pull Sandra. And then if you're Asian, you're on, but it's the same. You're usually one, lucky if you're two. So, but here's what I feel historically. When black people have fought for rights, everyone benefit. Like, if you look at the civil rights, everyone benefited from civil rights, even before civil rights, because when black people are talking about our rights, it's usually representative of everyone non-white, because we're usually going up against a system of white supremacy, whether it's on the show or in real life. And so what you saw this summer, ironically, folks say, oh, man, I didn't get my second chance to play. I will say folks have no idea with all these black people that got together that met for the first time. I felt like I was literally playing Black Survivor, but it was all for the good. And I'm being dead serious. I'm not even going to mince my words because when you're getting to know people you don't know, just like the island, you're going to have personality. You know, you all have this different stuff going on, zodiac signs, demographic. But what I will say, like with all things, like the civil rights movement, like the women's suffrage movement and the abolitionist movement, when people converge to see the greater good of what they have in common, things get done. And I do believe with Black Survivor Alliance, with Soul Survivors, brothers like Earl, and people just, all of us collectively did our part. Because just like with Malcolm and Martin, you have to hit this thing from many different angles. And so from all those discussions, we see that CBS put out this this statement saying that it'll be 50%. They didn't say just black. They said people of color, indigenous. So guess what? Yeah. It's a victory for everyone.
And absolutely. You
know, we put in that work and it was a lot. Trust me, it was a lot of behind the scenes stuff that, and I always say publicly, I'm not going to ever go at anybody black in the public and perpetuate the silliness. I always have a behind the scenes conference, a phone call, but I won't ever throw anyone. But I will say, moving forward, it will be great to see them put 50% non-white people so they can represent America. So with that said, you know, Earl, Sandra, how do you guys feel about this announcement being made? What did you feel about it? I know, Earl, you were privy to some of those conversations. Sandra, hopefully we'll definitely see more Latin folks. How do y'all feel about that?
Just can I ask a question real quick to Sandra? I know based on the Black community of Survivor, there are two groups going, the BSA and then Soul Survivors. Has the Latino community of Survivor, have they come together and started talking about trying to build up that community? Are you aware of anything like that?
Sandra's shaking her head no.
Yeah. It's her and Jesse. Any more? I haven't watched.
Were there any more?
Yeah. I mean, Ozzy and of course,
yeah,
you know,
Ozzy, Christina.
Probably on one hand.
The girl Gonzalez.
Yeah, Stephanie Gonzalez.
I mean, there's a handful. Maybe
Billy Garcia. Sure.
Billy. Yeah, that's
right. Billy. Yeah.
But how do you guys feel about this thing coming down? How do you think moving forward that will affect?
I think it's awesome. I was happy to hear the news. I just need to see it. You know what I'm saying? We always see what they're going to do.
But gotta have the action.
Are they not going to say that, oh, we couldn't find, we were looking for this kind of caliber. Maybe next time. Like, I need to see it first before, you know, we throw a party.
Mm-hmm. Earl, how you feel about that?
I think it's wonderful that it all came together that way. 50% is great. You know, that was always the goal. I think originally they were talking 30%, then went to 40%. Mm-hmm. 50% is great. And I think that's a great reflection of just diversity in the country. A lot of people, you know, I want to kill that argument now about people saying, well, people of color only represent 15% of the country. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. So Survivor, you know, reflects, you know, that. To squash that. So you're telling me that, okay, minorities are put in a bad position a lot of times by being minorities who don't have as many opportunities to win. You're going to replicate that same situation on an island where we have to work together with different people and we're still a minority and you expect us to win. So I always try to let people like think about it that way. Like, you're putting us in the same situation again to not win. So if you make it more equal, and 50% is great, I think we'll have more diverse stories now. Mm-hmm. You get more in depth. You know, it won't be this kind of this layer of racial things that can be talked about. And you can expose some of the people, because let's talk about the opposite side of the people, the non-white people that have biases, strong biases against people of color. Mm-hmm. Get them off the show. You know, stop letting them in to where the other people might feel uncomfortable. And I think this has been talked about, I think, with Julia Carter. I think Jolanda dealt with that. We can go on, and we don't even have enough time to get into the opposite side that we need to talk about, too, on the other people that get on the show and they get this platform as well to spew hate or their biases or homophobia or whatever it might be. So I think this is a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. And CBS is on the right side of history by doing this, and I applaud Sepia and Sean and both Survivor groups that work together. And Sandra, you need to start the first Latino Survivor group. Get them round them up.
Right. Round
them up.
Let's That's right.
It.
Yeah.
Round them up. You know, let's do it. I think it would be great. You know, it'll be the first Latin male winner. Come on, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, and then plug on to a little bit of what Earl said. When you look at our communities, okay, my son is 17 years old, getting ready for college. So we're doing college apps and all of this stuff. And so he's gotten a couple of acceptances. And so he was talking about Howard University, which is one of the schools that he's put in for. And he's like, I know they always talk about if I get into UC Irvine, I need to find my tribe, and that tribe of maybe 200 Black kids at University of Irvine that he's got to connect with. But then he's just like, Mom, if I go to Howard, that whole school is my tribe. But then I got to find my tribe within my tribe. He said, because there's going to be light-skinned Black folk, dark-skinned Black folk. They're going to be Rastafarian Black folk, African Black folk. So there's that other layer that he needs to worry about. So I say this to say even Survivor, when you start to put more Blacks on there, it's going to be a good thing, but you're going to have some light-skinned black folk that are going to be like, them ain't my people. And right. may connect more so with a Caucasian person, but right. to see that dynamics right. is something that's missing also. Well, see,
you yeah. know what? That reminds me of that quote, everybody who's your skin folk ain't your kin ain't folk. Your kin we know folk. That. So I think I always love the fact that while we're talking about diversity and inclusion, I want people to realize we don't all get along. We're not a monolith, mm-hmm. but our experiences are similar because we're black. Like the injustices we have, whether you're a rich black, whole mm-hmm. black, working class, you see it happening throughout society now that we have cameras, but it's always been universally black. Now, that doesn't mean our outlook on life is the same. And so what you would see to you guys' point is that if it was truly diverse, you're going to see some black people not voting for each other, talking crap about each other, talking mm-hmm. crap about the Latin person who, because guess what? All Latino and black coalitions ain't on the same accord. Like, right. it's really about showing if you truly level the playing field and put all kinds of people, to your point, Earl, make it a human experiment where you go, what will bring humans together outside of the obvious? Like, I'm black. What else? I like a Marvel. Well, I'm a DC dude. Well, I already know I'm voting you out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, exactly. We ain't gonna get along.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Rob, I wanted to ask you, Rob.
Yes.
What do you think as a white male? Is there pushback? What do you think will be or is the sentiment from white survivor fans or even white survivor contestants?
Yeah.
From hearing this news or hearing all of this stuff we've been talking about all summer and even right now.
And again, you know, I can't speak for all white people, and I don't want to. But that I feel like that just for me personally, and the people that I talk to in the survivor community, I think that everybody's really excited about this, and I think that if you can then sort of like if we can get past sort of like a lot of the bias that shows up in these seasons of Survivor, we can make the game more of a level playing field, and we can get back to talking about the game because everybody has more of a fair chance. And I think it only has a more, you know, improved product that we're seeing out there. Plus, we're only going to bring in more of a diverse audience to the show. And so hopefully like it becomes a more popular show also. And if you love Survivor, I think that this is a really positive change, and not just on camera, but then also they've also announced that they were going to be making changes behind the camera and including more people of color in a lot of the producing spots. And then also CBS had pledged that they were going to, I believe, have 25% of the reality projects that they were doing were going to be, executive produced by people of color as well.
Well, nothing can seize power without a demand. And we pushed collectively. There was no one person. There was a lot that went into these groups and things. Throw it to you, Earl, because I know you got to go. I'm just interested in... if you were given the opportunity to go on again, and I know we've all been asked this, would you go? And if the answer is no, what would you like to have as a part of the show? Would you want to be a host or a producer? Would you want to help contestants? You know, like, give me your vision of Earl's connection to Survivor.
Great question, Sean. There's part of me that I don't mind going back. I don't have the same pull as some people who didn't win. I always say because they want to go back and fix mistakes and change this and change that. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of those things. My main purpose of wanting to go back, if I do go back I've been asked back a few times, is just to raise the platform for the charity work that I do. So that's mm-hmm. really, I want this generation, my kids are still too young, but, I mentor a lot of, young kids and, they would love to see me on there again. So my purpose would really be for that. And I even told CBS before, I said, if I go come back again, I'm donating my entire $1 million to charity.
Wow. Like,
it would be for that. I said, maybe I would be the first player to ever do that, but that's something that would mean something to me. And the production side, I would love to be a part of that. If they gave me that kind of opportunity, I know I couldn't be out on the island. I don't even think I want to do the stuff that the producers are doing with that. But hey, I'll be back in the office looking at some
air conditioning, right?
I don't mind doing that. And I think I think it helps have the insights from, you know, I'm glad, you know, that CBS is making those changes, you know, and I'd be glad we get past the numbers. Like, we want 25% this, but like, just make it fair and equal. You know, yeah. Just great people. We shouldn't even have to keep putting a number on it, but let's just do something. Now, you know, more people of color in the editing room, production, camera people, like all of that. I think on my season, there was one brother out of all the camera crew and everything. I think he was there for that one season. And that was it. And so hopefully, you know, they'll keep on adding and adding. You start getting more depth to these stories. So like, I want more depth, you know, because people have a lot to say. And to Sean's point, we're not monolith at all. There's different layers and people have different experiences of being Black, Latino, all of that. So we're not going to always just get along. I mean, we're human beings don't get along. Hell, married people don't get along all the time. Yeah. So, you know, I think it would just be great to where you can just strip away all the other stuff and just like, let's just play Survivor. Everybody has a fair shot. You're with me. That's it.
Hmm. You know, I bring that up because I wasn't it Cochran that got a writing job on CBS? Like, I think live. I'm going to get started because my whole thing has always been because I have never been given a fair shot, in my opinion. And this ain't got nothing to do with fans or whatever. I'm saying I know the game I played and what I did and what I sacrificed. And I felt like I gave up a lot. And so moving forward, whether I'm blessed or not, I would love for the next Black, brown, Asian, gay person, whomever that makes their mark to be offered a position to further their employment or make their mark on the show. Like I said, you see them Survivor, you know, from Jeff Probst to Mark handing out money to people that they like, you know, oh, you felt slighted. We're just going to give you money. Or
are we going to go there now?
I'm going I ain't afraid of controversy. Listen, I don't throw nobody under the bus. I just call the receipt what they are. My thing is, my wish going forward, this isn't going back and drudging up old stuff, is that there will be a platform for people, even rotate hosts. Let me repeat that. Rotate the host. Let different people who have played the game, you know, nurture some of those people because Jeff has shown that he is biased. He's shown it at different times. Say no shade. I'm just saying do different things so that as we bring in different demographics, the opportunity, you go, man, after that long, like I said, the therapy that's needed after, you go, you know what? Maybe I can be on behind the scenes and give some ideas for challenges, or there are some cultural things that maybe I can give insight to, even the narrative of that we can't swim. Maybe we ain't got to do a whole bunch of water exercises the first 10 challenges. Maybe we can, you know, just different things. So, Sandra, what are some of the things, you know, and when I saw you and Rob, I thought, wow, that's cute. I mean, it looked ridiculous to me, and this ain't no shady. I just thought having this big head, I would love to have, I'm being real. I would have loved if someone like Sandra and Rob were making Jeff Probst decisions, being that they are popular, that they won. I would have loved to know that they were behind the scenes making executive decisions, not on some island and, you know, giving a little advice and, you know, because part of the game is luck and that's great. And I'm not saying the check wasn't nice, but I'm like, there should be more opportunity. And I know it's wishful thinking, but Sandra, how do you feel about that? And it's not negating the season that they did that. But I feel, as I said before, you having won twice, have a unique perspective that to me is beyond coconuts and, you know, the island, that you have a unique perspective. You had the whole island of Puerto Rico cheering for you. Like, you just had people going out to buy TVs to go. You represent so much more. I felt like they could have given you more than just some island thing. How do you feel about that, Sandra? Maybe not. I'm just disappointed.
Well, I guess I didn't think about it like that. I was happy to get asked to be a mentor, to be honest with you. I love seeing the big 24-foot totem. I actually thought mine looked more like me, where I was telling Rob, I was like, damn, yours could be any 3 to 4 people. Like, you know, but you look at mine and that's really me. And then really, I knew from the beginning that we were just going to be living there. And then we'd have visitors every 2 to 3 days. And then we just teach them a lesson. From the beginning, Jeff always said, you know, don't worry about it because only 3 to 4 minutes is going to be on TV. Although the person might be there for 2 to 3 hours, but you don't have to overthink it because we're just going to put 3 to 4 minutes on TV. Like, it was cut and dry what I was going out there to do. It was realistic. And I was like, oh, that's simple. I can do that. You know, I don't have to think about going to tribal council. I don't have to play the game. I don't have to go to the water well with everyone and make fake a lot. You know, like it was just a job for real. Yeah. It was just a job. And I was going to go and do it for 36 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rob told me when he got it. And I was,
I will say this. I learned a lot from sitting out there as far as what the cameramen and the producers and the people that carry the equipment go through, you know? And you see a lot of the behind the scenes things that I never saw before as a player. Mm-hmm. So it opened my eyes to a lot of things. For example, like when we did the fire challenge that Elizabeth came, we didn't know it was Elizabeth until she comes. Like they don't tell us who it's going to be. We just prepare. And they had lawyers. I didn't know this, that actually come out there and they measured both platforms. They made sure that everything was equal. And I turned to the guy that does the challenges.
John. Yeah.
And I was like, I always thought that, oh, if Sandra's going to go dig over there, I'm going to bury the shit 10 feet deep. And then if it's you said Cochran, or if it's Vesepia, I'm only going to bury it 2 feet deep, you know, or there, she's going to get 10 knots and she's going to get 2 knots out. And he was like, oh, no, Kierhofer. Yeah. He was like, oh, no, this, like it has to be fair across the board. And I never knew that because I would sit there and be like, oh, they knew I was going to be over there. That's why I fell off first, or, you know, looking for an excuse of why I'm always first to fall off at the challenges. But.
Yeah. Well, I know you got to go.
Before I go, Sean, I want to say this one thing about that. To your point about having more former survivors make decisions. I originally pitched that idea that Sandra about mentoring to CBS producers years ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you brought up Cochran, and no shade against Cochran at all.
Right, no shade.
I even pitched the idea of there should be a reward where a winner should be giving someone advice, and that's the reward. I said, because the winners, a lot of times we don't want to come back and play, but we'll come back and you know, be present and get. Because one thing, what I got from the show, I said, one thing I would have appreciated was getting some advice from a winner. That'd be great. Mm. And they act like I was crazy when I said that years ago. And then what happens? They did the Cochran thing. I pitched it for myself to come back for that, to be on a boat and all that. And they did that. And then they did the whole Rob and Sandra thing. I was like, wow. Where's my check?
Listen to you.
That's like Sean and I pitched the whole idea of separating and having a black tribe, a white tribe.
Yeah.
We did that at our finale when we were talking to Mark Burnett and your season. We were like, whoa.
And
here
they,
it is.
They give you, they say nothing at all about it.
Oh, no, they didn't throw us a bone. Mm-mm.
See, that's crazy.
I didn't even credit. Yeah.
You can at least just say, like, hey, we got this idea from... Because didn't they say they got some idea from Tyler Perry one time?
Yes. The idol in Kagyan, yeah.
So, yeah, I remember they mentioned that, something from Tyler Perry. But you can't say, like, hey, this idea originally came from a Survivor alumni, you know, Sean Record. This came from Earl Cole. Like, what's wrong with saying that? I think that's pretty cool if other Survivors give you an idea
for... They say other stuff at finales. They could have easily said that.
Yeah,
I'm glad one of them challenges wasn't dressing like Madea. What idea was it from Tyler Perry?
You would do it for $1 million, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you put me on the spot, brother. I don't know about putting on no dress, man.
For $1 million, you won't put on a dress?
You know what? We've done more.
On national television. Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But I didn't even know his name was brought up into the franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big Survivor fan.
Yeah,
he made that idol that they always talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so unplugged. That's what I say. When I say names, I don't throw shade. I just go from what I remember. I know.
Yeah.
He was on the finale. He was in the audience at the finale for that season also.
Really? I may have seen it.
It's on Netflix.
But just in general, for us to have someone in the black community as big as Tyler Perry be a fan, but the representation of black folks not kind of go with that, to me also speaks to, you know, some of those implicit biases. And I think, you know, moving forward to Sandra's, they got to show and prove, you know, everybody can talk a good game.
Yeah.
And those, everybody behind the scenes that put in that work, that went into a lot of conversation with, you know, that, you know, it come at a lot of sacrifice, because I also feel like within that, you're also jockeying because there are people that also want to stay in good graces with CBS and Survivor. So a lot of folk don't want to necessarily rock the boat too much. And to me, rocking the boat is not about you. It's about the bigger picture. It's about understanding that people like Dr. King and Malcolm X rocked the boat. People like Shirley Chisholm, way before Barack Obama, rocked the boat as a woman and as a Black person, and had paved the way. So that's why I said, Earl, watching you and Vesepia, obviously I was with Vesepia, but as a Black man, I was so proud of you, brother. I always tell you, I know you got to get off. And I said in my interview, I feel like I always give props to Jervis and Nick and Clarence for me, because it matters. Like, I had to either watch them or understand that the game is shaped by how people view you. And for you to be able to cross that finish line, you know, it's just kudos and props to you, brother, because I think.
Thank you very much.
Is also one of those finales that will go down in history as a bizarre one, where people, what is really going on with how they're voting and even what they're saying to these contestants. And that's a deeper in another conversation. So I know you have to go. I just wanted to give you props. And if you have any last words, we're going to continue the conversation. But
thank you. Hey, much love to you, Sean, Vesepia, Sandra, as always. Rob, thank you again for this platform. Thank you again, Brother Sean, for putting it together. You need me, you know I'm there anytime. All right.
Tell us how we can support you, Earl, real quick. Any platforms, your nonprofit, tell us so we can put that out.
Nonprofit is PerthesKids.org. That's P as in Paul. Wait, how do you spell it? P-E-R-T-H-E-S-Kids.org.
Yeah, you gotta get the spelling right.
All right, man. Yeah. So hey, that's this. See,
yeah, that's you sipping that? I got a little water. I'm like, maybe I need to have that.
Love you, brother. Rob, thank you.
Take care, Earl.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye. AV, did you have a? What's the there? There's a definite connection between you and Sandra. You guys may or may not. Y'all, I mean, y'all have talked. Like I said, I've met Sandra, cool as hell. I know you. But I think, I don't know, you guys speak to it. I think there's a through line between you and Sandra. Either one of you want to speak on that? I mean, y'all are both, like I said, y'all both were in the military. Y'all both won.
I didn't tell nobody on the Pearl Island. I felt like from watching the season where Ken, the guy Ken, the minute they knew he was military, and I think he was just reserves, and already he had this stigma attached to him, and he was one of the first, you know, they just went after him. So I was like, no matter what, that's a part of my life that I won't disclose to anyone. Not that I lied about it. I just didn't say I was military. I just said I was a military wife, which I was, because by then I was out of the military, and I was indeed, in fact, a military wife. So there's just things that you sometimes have to... not disclose, not that you're lying. You just don't have to say everything.
Right. And part of my strategy was, number one, getting to know everybody that was on there and learning a little bit more about them. So everyone was pretty much open with me in talking about their history. And so we know John was in the military. So we sat down and had lots of conversations about that. But to your question, Sean, one of the things that I noticed as I watched Sandra play is that there was this connection in how our gameplay was actually shared, because she came out talking a lot about y'all can vote for anybody as long as it's not me. And the way that I came at that is like, I don't want no drama, and I'm going to flip to whoever I need to make sure that my name isn't flipped on one of those cards. So it was definitely, when I saw Sandra playing, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, somebody has kind of got that same type of gamesmanship that I don't care where the vote go, but don't put it to me. And you can use my vote where it needs to be used. Just don't put my name down. So that's where I found a lot of commonality in the way that both of us play.
Interesting. You know, you think about, like, you guys are winners. I'm going to keep stressing that, because the whole name of the game is to win. Whether you are editing, whether fans like you or not, I always say, if you outwit, outlast, outplay, and you got the $1 million check, there's no way in hell they should have left you, my sister, off that winner's circle. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go to bat for you. I'm always challenge the showrunners. I know if they never ever have me back, I'm gonna always have your back, because I feel like I didn't win. No matter how many funny moments or embarrassing moments or TV moments, I didn't win. You won. You were the first and only African American woman still. And to not at least be invited back. To Earl's point, when Jeff said whatever about Earl not being, I'm like, that always bothered me, because no one ever challenges Jeff. They think he's this powerful guy who, yes, he is in Hollywood, but ain't nobody above God. Ain't nobody above criticism. And wrong is wrong is right is right. And I know I'm always looking like the bad guy, especially in our meetings and even when I chastise and criticize the show. But the nail in the coffin for me was when you didn't get invited in the Winners of War. They didn't even give you a phone call. Explain to, you know, the folks out there, how did you feel initially, first knowing there was going to be a winner's circle? Maybe that brought some excitement. And then finding out, not only were you not on it, but you were not asked. Speak to that.
Mm-hmm. So I even want to go back even further to the point where they had the very first, where they did an all-star and they brought people back. Now, the all-star wasn't all winners, but it was an all-star. And quite naturally, we did expect that Kathy would be on there, because she was really kind of like the spearhead of our team. And that's fine. Okay. But then after that, you know, and I stated this when we met with CBS, you've had 13 seasons where you brought people back. And in these 13 seasons, my name wasn't tossed out at any point to where I would at least get a phone call to say, hey, are you interested? Now, I did get that phone call on that very first All-Star. But the question was, hey, Vesepia, are you interested? We're calling everybody. So to say, are you interested? To say, are you interested? And then say, oh, by the way, we're calling everybody. That doesn't let me know that, hey, you know, you were singling me out because you like what I did. And then after that, each time, you know, you're sitting there watching the finales and they say where the new season is. And you're like, oh, okay, they're bringing people back. Looking at the phone, nothing. Checking emails, nothing. That does put a dagger in me to say, you know, did you not appreciate my gameplay? Whether you liked it or not, you know, the people that were out there playing the game with me, they appreciated it, because if you talk to them, they're going to tell you, this girl did some stuff that was unprecedented. And you guys just didn't capture it. But we saw her do so many things. And for whatever reason, you did not have the platform or didn't have the balls enough to see it and to try to capture it. And with that, you chose not to bring her back. So I don't know if you chose to say, okay, yeah, we'll show her because she is a quote unquote winner. We have to at least show her doing some stuff. But it's not enough to where we feel that we've got to be showcasing her. And even if it's not that, the fact that, hey, this is our first African-American winner. This is our first Black female winner. And on that merit alone, you don't bring this person back. It's been a slap in the face. But the joy of it all is, as people, you know, because I don't do a lot of speaking to situations like this. But when I do, people come back and are like, Vesepia, I watched your season again. And I was extremely impressed. And I don't know what they did not see, but I see something different each and every time that I watch your season. So that in itself has made me feel good that, you know, I know what I did. And when I talk to the people that were on the season with me, they know what I did. And that's enough to make me feel good.
No doubt. And remember, I was out there. Your back was up against the wall. Had you not won those challenges, you would have been voted off sitting next to me. I was in the jury rooting for you, like, you win in these challenges. You won all the way up. That should have been acknowledged. Sandra, before you clocked out, I was asking, I said that I believe that you and Vesepia, there is a connection. I'm going to ask you, were you surprised that Vesepia was never asked back as a winner and even in the winner's circle? Have you spoken to other survivors? And even as a winner yourself, as a woman, did that ever strike you as something odd or no?
Oh, yeah, I expected to see Vesepia, even like Tina, like I expected to see certain people at Winners at War. And then we saw so many people from the later seasons. And even like in an all-star season, definitely Vesepia. But I don't know what their criteria is. And I, you know,
yeah,
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to answer that.
I ain't gonna put you on the spot.
No, and I apologize. Look, my daughter was calling me. It went to my headphones. This phone is new, so it wasn't all the way. It was a lot of drama. I was panicking.
Too much drama.
Yeah. It is. Even $1 million, you can have some janky headphones. It just mm-hmm.
No. They're the good and
yeah.
This phone is brand new. I got it today. It's the 12 Pro Max, and I don't know how to use it. I don't know how to use it. And on purpose, I didn't plug it into the cloud because I didn't want all my storage and all the pictures to get downloaded. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to forget that. But anyway, I expected to see a lot of faces at Winners at War that I did not see. And even like when they had fans versus favorites or blood versus water, there's definitely other people I would have liked to have seen out there. I would definitely love to see more old school players in the mix.
Definitely.
I don't think you guys get a fair shot. Winners at War didn't start out being what they call a old school versus new school. It just ended up, I think, mm-hmm. happening like that. But yeah. we didn't realize it until after the fact and until everybody got home that, you know, we just fell out in a specific way. But hopefully moving forward, like you guys said, things are going to change. Mm-hmm. So let's see what happens. And I don't think anyone's age right now is a factor. I'm not an athlete and I still go out there. So I don't think anybody's age should be a reason why they can't come back.
Yeah, well, I'm going to speak for myself because I got ointments and rubs. I got all kinds of, you know, in my cabinet. I may not look my age, but I think for someone like myself, who's about to be 50, if I was ever asked to come back or anyone who's approaching our age, we need a good year to get ourselves together. Well, I'm just being real because you get out.
They're not going to give you that.
That's what I'm saying. What my requirement would be, because you get out there and mess around and pull something, your ACL, whatever's going on.
Sean, you're in good shape. What do you need to do for a year? Stretch? Right.
Listen, black on track, it just gets you shot in society. I know I may not look 50, but I'm just saying for folks who are at least 50 and up, look, I did the show when I was 30. You gonna wait 20 something years to be like, hey, we got this idea. I'm a father. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. Vesepia can speak to that. So again, I ain't gonna speak for everybody. You got people like Philip who are in great shape. He's in his 60s. Right. All I'm saying is survivor is not an easy thing physically. Mm-hmm. And for people to think you just gonna jump out there and start running around, no. You have to get your mind, your body, mm-hmm. your spirit together. And if you are older, your recuperation rate ain't what it was when you was in your 20s and 30s. So I just think definitely, and again, I'm saying a year, Sandra. It could be 6 months, it could be whatever, but you mm-hmm. definitely can't just call people and go, hey, do you want to come out next month? Especially if people of a certain age.
Well, that's what Sandra does, though.
And certain people will jump right at that. I'm the same way. I'll be 55 in December, and I tore my ACL 3 years ago. And every time I see them running through that sand, all I keep thinking about, damn, if my ACL snaps while I'm trying to run through some sand or trying to jump off of some cliff, I'd just be so toe up. So I'm with Sean. I don't have a desire to go back out there. But if it ever happened, I would love to be able to go out there with my son. Like I said, he's 17 years old now. Mm-hmm. And to go out there and play that game with him, because he wasn't even born when I went out there the first time. Right. And as I always say, you know, my torch sits right over there, and every now and then we'll look at it and have conversations. But to be able to go out there with him would be a blessing in itself. But that's about it. That's the only reason I would want to go out there. And you did ask a question earlier, what other ways would we like to contribute to Survivor? I would love to have the opportunity to be an influencer, not like having that big old head like Sean and or like Sandra and Rob had. But even before they go out there to play, to have an opportunity to go in and talk to those that are either made it to the show and talk with them about what to expect. Because you learn later on that although you ain't supposed to be talking to folks, people did talk to different people and tell them what to expect. They know new folks. Were we trying to keep it all honest? People were doing that stuff. But then even after they get off of the show, you know, sometimes people are more comfortable talking to folks that look like them. And Dr. Liza would be there and they'd be like, no, I'm good. I'm fine. But yet, if I talked with an African-American that just got off the show, they're going to be real with us.
Yeah.
they're going to talk to us about the things that didn't come up. And then we could be that go-between to really help kind of mesh and get that understanding through to the producers or whoever.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I've never heard that suggested before. And I guess it speaks to, you know, the work that the Black Survivor alumni have done, where it's sort of like they've taken that on themselves, as opposed to mm-hmm. it being something that's offered from production.
Yeah,
you know, to your point, Rob, I definitely want to give a shout out to Jatia and Bryce, Jamal, mm-hmm. some of the younger players. There's different camps, but we're all on the same accord. And I think what it brought us together was there's a Black Survivor Facebook page that you would be welcomed in. And that was a pretty dope platform because these young folk are very proficient with mm-hmm. social media. And I think in addition to that, what Vesepi is saying, the things that have been discussed, to be able to mentor or help folk culturally deal with what they just experienced. Because I know, as I said several times, when I left the show, I thought I had a form of PTSD. I could not mm-hmm. talk to anyone but Vesepia. She was the mm-hmm. only one that knew culturally and what the experience was like. And I say that because I also feel like Marquesas was a unique season in which we weren't given anything. Like, it really felt like when I start looking at other seasons where they look healthy towards the end, we were literally crackheads towards the end. We had no food, no water, and that played havoc on our minds, our psyche, and I don't think we really got proper help. But I do want to I want to make this, you know, some winner stuff. What are some tips as winners, Sandra, you and V, like if someone can say, hey, if I can pick Vesepia's mind, or Sandra's a two-time winner, she got to know the secrets. What would be some tips that you guys can give the viewers on obviously winning takes a lot of, it's a little bit of luck and definitely strategy. But what are some things that, if you could give advice to would-be fans who want to do the show as winners, because what you guys say weighs a lot more than just whoever they like. What would be some of those things?
For me, when I talk to people, I always let them know. And I don't know what I put off, because anytime anyone talks to me and finds out that I'm a winner, after like 10 minutes, they're like, oh, I'm going to go on Survivor and win $1 million. I don't know what it was about what I just told you for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, you think that you've never watched the show, but you can go and get $1 million. But anyway, for me, it has always been that your social game has to be on par, simply because you have to try to find something in common with every single person out there. And that's what I brought, being a military soldier and a wife, because we have met people from all walks of life. You know what I'm saying? So you try to find something in common with them. And my social game is the only thing that I think helps me win. Mm-hmm. And even when I go back and play, people assume that even if my tribe loses the first challenge, I'm automatically going to be the first person getting voted out after even winning two times. And it's not the case, because people like me, to others' belief, because some people are like, oh, I can't stand Sandra. Like, they don't really even know me. But I try to get along with every single person. And you really do have to throw the first stone for me to come mm-hmm. at you. And then I'm relentless. But I think a social game is what everyone needs to have. Physical, like, I don't care that you do Iron Man and you do whatever the crap they all do. That doesn't automatically mean you're going to win Survivor. You have to have a social game. People have to like you. People want to give $1 million to somebody they like. And I think that's why I feel like a social game is important. And that's what I bring to Survivor.
It's a great point. B?
Yeah. For me, it's like you have to find a balance in the game. You don't want to just be all strong social game, because then you're going to lack in the strategic game. You may lack in the physical game. And don't be all strong in the physical game, because people are definitely going to notice that, because then you're lacking in the social. So if you can find the balance in each and every one of those pieces, and then know, because there's going to be times where you're going to go out there and you're going to see the challenge, and you have to ask yourself in your brain right then and there, how far do I think I can go in this competition? You know, and if you know you can go far, then, you know, try to win it. But if you're like, I don't know about this one, at least don't be the first one to bail. You know, try to make it seem like you were trying, and then bail when you think you need to. And then at least they can look at you and be like, okay, yeah, you know, she gave it her all, but she didn't win it. And in your mind, you was like, hell no, I didn't like being out in that water, but I ain't going to be the one to bail first, because then that's where your target go. So I said, find your balance. and find those areas where you are good at and those areas that you're weak at. But those areas that you're weak at least push yourself a little bit more.
You know, I think Survivor, it can be used as a platform for social change. I know I got a lot of critics who are like, why are you always talking about it? Because this is just the game. People need to get over it. This is just TV. Obviously, those of us who experience it, we have a different, we walk away from something different, but it's just entertainment. But at the same time, we know that people watch a lot of TV and are influenced by what they see. And I just believe that the showrunners should have a better responsibility moving forward to affect social change in a climate where, I mean, look, we look like we're heading for a second civil war. If you look at the news and watch what's happening, you go, TV has a responsibility to show us at our highest self, to show us what we're capable of. Stop perpetuating these stupid reality shows with these stereotypes and people fighting and throwing wine bottles at each other and cursing and housewives of take your pick. Yeah, that's cool and all, you know, when you want to get away from reality. But a show like Survivor, like Big Brother, like Amazing Race, where you're talking about human interaction in real time, in real situations, the producers and the showrunners have an obligation and an opportunity to really show us at our highest self so that we can aspire to something higher than just cutthroat TV, win by all means, you know, morals are out the window just for a check. And so even when I was asked earlier, Earl was like, for $1 million, you wouldn't? I'm saying I may not. I mean, because I'm very outspoken. I've probably messed up more opportunities by being outspoken because I believe in principles and the things I believe in. So I just hope that moving forward, these changes, these numbers, these 50%, 20% will produce not just different types of winners, but different types of challenges and a different show that's not just idols and backstabbing and lying. I feel like, yes, you know, they can do that.
Yeah. So, Sean, I agree with you on that. And I've got to get off the phone in a minute. But when we look at a lot, COVID has really changed the whole trajectory of what's going on in our world, not just for us being sheltered in place, things like that, but then also with the Black Lives Matter that is happening. And it's starting to be very much reflective in the television shows that are coming out, because a lot of shows prior to COVID were already ready to go out. When they were able to go back into the, whether it's a set or whatever, you started to see some serious changes. I mean, shows like The Neighborhood, Bob Hart's Abishola, those are some of my favorite shows. And now that they've come back, All Rise, they've changed the way that they bring those shows to us. And they are really hitting the platforms that are right in front of us right now. And I'm hoping that when Survivor comes back, that they are taking all of that into consideration. And, you know, we hope that the editing will reflect what's happening and let that stuff be part of the platform. Don't remove that, because we need to see that. And that's part of the change. That's part of where we're going to grow and learn and make change happen.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Sandra, you have any last words or parting words?
No, I'm just more of a give you an answer to a question type of girl.
That's $1 million. Mm-hmm. You just said, you like, you know, I'm just 2 million deep. I don't know what y'all need from me, but you know, long as the check clears. Nah.
I just hope that it does happen the way you guys say it happened, that there's no excuses why it's not going to happen immediately, you know, in the next season. And there's never, because there will be excuses on to why it didn't happen this time, but maybe next time, you know. So let's
No excuses. Yeah.
Yeah, there is no excuse. Speak to the fire. And they got to do what they say.
You know, Survivor, you know, if there's any silver lining of, you know, this terrible pandemic that we've all gone through, is that, you know, they were planned to shoot season 41. They would have already shot a season that would be on right now and a season that would be on in the spring. And our society and, you know, our country has gone through, you know, such, you know, great changes in a short period of time. And they would have had a year of Survivor that would not be reflective of those changes and, you know, everything that, you know, people have been able to work so hard to achieve with these shows. And so now they do have a little bit of a fresh start of a year layoff and the opportunity to implement all these changes that people have been asking for. And so I think that, you know, Survivor does have a chance to a little bit like have a reboot of the franchise whenever they get to start to filming and, you know, airing in the fall of next year.
I think you're on to something. you know, we've put in a lot of work. I also want to give a shout out to Yolanda Jones and Philip, who are also part of the Black Survivor Alliance, because there was a letter that went out to CBS on Juneteenth. And I think that, along with the petition from Jatia and along with these meetings, we may not all get the credit. And I want people to hear me clearly. Mm-hmm. This isn't about clout chasing or who's in front of the camera, whose names show up. Because throughout history, there are many nameless, faceless people that don't get credit who put their lives on the line. This is a collective fight for moving forward. So I just want to say that as they do this people of color thing, to know that it was a bunch of Black people through all of the infighting and all of that, that made it possible for a lot of non-Black folks, hopefully moving forward. And they, those names may not ever come out, but I just think people need to realize that there was a lot that went into making change and forcing their hand. So I know, you know, my name comes up a lot, especially because I speak outwardly against Jeff and the brand from my own experience. And but it's out of love, really. It's really out of saying y'all can do better. You know, you can do better. And to all of what you guys just said, we hope that this isn't lip service, that when we turn on Survivor in the next year or two, that all of us who put in the work and even those who had wished for from fans can sit back proudly and watch a show that's reflective of where America can go as opposed to where we've been.
Yeah. All right, Sean, Sandra, Rob, I got to go. Love you all. Thank you so
great
much
to see
for
you.
This time.
Yes.
Always a pleasure.
All right.
Love you, sis.
Sandra, I love you, girl.
Take care. We'll talk.
Okay.
Definitely.
When I get all this right. phone right, because I don't know how to use it.
All right. Peace out.
Take care, Giuseppe. All right. Sean, anything else you want to add tonight?
Well, look, it feels like we just been voting people out. Like we
no,
did
we're fine. Yeah, well, we know how this is going to end. Sandra's going to be the only one left.
The two-time winner, right?
We left like always, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what? Let me say this.
Yes.
I guess I have been blessed. I've been one of the lucky ones. And I think because I move, when I go to Survivor, I do Survivor, and then I come home and I'm back to be a mama and being this employee over there and doing this, and you know, that I don't get caught up in a lot of things, and I don't look for, how can I say, they did this for that person, but they didn't do it for me. So how do I explain? I don't feel like I've been left out, although I'm one of the lucky ones from the minority. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I have been lucky. Like Earl had to go and put himself on BET, you know, where I was, okay, Sandra, you're going on Howard Stern. Okay, Sandra, you're going on David Letterman. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it was different times too. When I won season 7, it was season 7, you know, not, you know, season 15 or season 30, you know, where now things are very different. There's not as many opportunities, or the new group isn't doing what the old group did when, you know, Survivor was in his heyday or whatever you want to call it. So,
no doubt.
I've been very fortunate, Sean.
Can I add on to that? I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that. Because the one problem I've always had is, I can speak for Negroes, but I grew up in a Latina household, in a Dominican household. I speak Spanish. Like I said, my upbringing is very Black and brown, but I'm a Black man. And I know that the struggle with Black people has always been to be the one special Negro, like to make sure that we distance ourselves. Like, it's something wrong with y'all, as opposed to looking at it like, I'm fortunate. Let me drop the ladder for others to come up. Because what happens in white society, whether it's corporate America or in general, they'll allow a few of you and a few of us to skate through. And then you're made to feel like you're special. When in actuality, I mean, if you take Jackie Robinson, we could use sports. He wasn't the best in the Negro League. He was just the one they said that could acclimate to this hostile environment with an educational background, with a military. He was like the perfect Negro. And that was a lot of responsibility. So to your point, I just want people of color, and specifically Black folks and non-white contestants, you know, if you have an opportunity like Sandra and you're a winner and you have a platform, don't then distance yourself like you special. Just know that you were blessed, and in your position comes a lot. To whom much is given, much is required, that people are looking to you as a symbol. Sandra, you started out by saying, like, I mean, we talking about Black people. The whole island of Puerto Rico, it was like must-see TV. Like, and it's not on some entertainment, but as a pride. You look at Donald Trump going down to Puerto Rico during the hurricane. shooting jump shots with paper towels, disrespecting the whole island of folk, and just, you know, people going through rebuilding their lives. And imagine to look on TV and see a Borinquen, right? A Boricua on there representing. That means so much. And I think the same with Vesepia when she won, understanding that it's bigger than you. And we got to stop distancing ourselves from the moment and realize, yes, we're fortunate. But at the same time, there are many others that this isn't representative. And then once we acknowledge that, and once the level playing field is level, we can then stop talking about first and representing. You can just be Sandra. That could be Vesepia. I can be Sean. You can be Rob. But until then, it just feels like there is a burden. So I'm glad you said that, because you've been fortunate, but I think you've been a noble and a person who people can look to, because you're the same person on this interview as you are off camera. Anyone who meets you is going to say the same thing. Like, there is nothing different that you're going to get from Sandra, and that's unique. So I applaud you, sister, and I appreciate you.
Thank you. I've always wanted to be very approachable, and I get that from the fans all the time when they see me. They're like, if they're fans and they know who I am, they're like, oh my God, Sandra, I feel like I know you. And they don't know me, but they get that vibe of, you know, but like I said, I come home and it's back to, okay, where's my next paycheck coming from? Because, you know, this survivor check ain't coming in the mail tomorrow. You know, they're going to come no matter what. So I just keep it moving.
Yeah. All right.
I don't even know how to work my phone.
Sean, is there anything else that you want to tell people to check out?
I do. As always, I have my nonprofit I've been running for 20 years, where Black and Brown boys come through my rites of passage. It's the www.thetimefoundation.org. We also started the African American Academy to help Black kids in high school who are being marginalized through this whole George Floyd stuff. We've been in high demand to come and do seminars and bring services to kids who are being marginalized. I will just continue to say to people to keep the faith, keep fighting. You may not always be seen, but to me, I always give glory to God and go, the universe will ultimately bend towards justice no matter what. Keep fighting. The game of Survivor, you know, as much as I constructively criticize, has been a blessing. It brought me closer to God. It brought me Vesepia, my godson. We're talking. I'm never, ever going to say the experience wasn't worth it. I just, anything I'm involved in, I want to make better. If my name is attached to it, I'm like, all right, let's do better. I don't want to stagnate. So I love you, Rob. I appreciate us putting this together. And thank you, Sandra, for blessing us on the mic. And yeah, that's it for me. Yeah.
Well, Sean, thank you for bringing us all together again today. I know that the listeners really appreciate it, as do I. Sandra, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Peace. Take care, guys.
All right, Sam. Take care.